Chapter 14, 1890. On day 4, a burial party of civilians and soldiers arrived and began piling bodies into wagons. The detachment commander, General Leonard Colby, decided it would be easier to bury the victims at the site of the massacre rather than transport them to the Pine Ridge Reservation. He commandeered both civilians and soldiers alike to excavate a common burial site. The task was arduous, in that the ground was frozen and snow flurries continued throughout the day and into the evening. Many of the deceased were frozen and were difficult to carry, which made the undertaking even more tedious. Soon they filled one wagon and drove a short distance and dumped the bodies into a large pit dug at the bottom of the small rise, below where the mountain guns had stood. The work continued until 10 that evening. It appeared that it would take many days to complete the task. A shout went out about 3 in the afternoon. Someone was found alive. Initially, the on-site commander thought it was a joke. He couldn't believe that someone could survive the massacre. The rescuers were even more surprised to find 4 babies alive. Initially, they didn't hear them. It was only after they lifted a few bodies that they could hear one of the infants crying, and then another, before they found the last 2. The 4 had miraculously survived by being wrapped in their mother's shawls. One baby had a leather cap on its head decorated with beads showing the American flag. General Colby subsequently adopted the baby. The babies became the center of attention, and one of the soldiers raised the issue of how to feed the crying children. One individual had some milk. He fashioned nipples out of the fingers in his gloves and fed the infants. This was a significant contrast between the nurturing of the rescued infants by soldiers, some of whom may have fired indiscriminately into the helpless Indians. One of the officers questioned Whitebird extensively on what happened and compared his version with that given by soldiers returning to Pine Ridge Reservation. Another round of questioning ensued, and Whitebird was accused of fabricating a story to make the soldiers look bad. "It's just your word against many who reported that the Indians were hostile and fired the first round at the soldiers," the interrogator said. "Believe what you want. I was here." "You weren't," he responded. "You can get in a lot of trouble by lying about what happened," the officer said as Whitebird walked away. When his story was leaked to the soldiers on the burial detail, it didn't sit well, and many of the soldiers were angry. They shouted at him, calling him a liar. Soon 5 of the more vocal soldiers confronted Whitebird and told him to take back his lie. Luckily, an officer overheard the commotion and ordered his soldiers to release the young Indian and go back to the burial site. One of those reluctantly going back told the officer, "This Indian kid is saying our guys are liars. You're not going to let him get away with it, are you?" "I'll take care of it," the officer responded and ordered the soldiers back to their task. He then turned to Whitebird. "We're here to bury hundreds. One more won't make any difference. If you don't want to end up in that big hole with the rest, I suggest you shut the hell up." Whitebird got the message and walked away. The relief group had planned to stay 2 to 3 days to bury the dead, but with the discovery of the babies, 4 of the civilians took a wagon back to Pine Ridge Reservation and handed them off to a representative of Chief Red Cloud. This left the relief group shorthanded, and their supervisor wanted Whitebird to help with the loading and burial of the bodies, but he refused. "I want to dig a fitting grave for my parents. As soon as I finish, I'll help with the burial of my people. I'm not going to have some smart-assed Indian tell me what he is or isn't going to do. You're either going to help dig the graves, or I'll kick your ass until you do. Take your pick." Whitebird realized that the supervisor would probably shoot him if he didn't do what he was told. But he held his ground, but his speech was less abrasive. "I'll gladly help with the graves, but if you don't mind, I'd like to bury my parents and my woman first." The supervisor threw him a shovel. "You'd better be back in 2 hours. After that, I'm going to come looking for you." He picked up the shovel and made his way to the 3 shallow graves. With the tool, he was able to widen the existing graves and lower the bodies so that they were covered by at least 2 feet of dirt and would keep away the wandering wolves. He cried when he laid Maiden Dream into her grave. He said a prayer over his parents' resting place and thanked them for raising him and his brothers. He especially remembered the love they showed him and how grateful he was to have such a family. Just as he was finishing, the officer appeared. "You've had enough time. Now report to the sergeant. I'd better not hear that you're not pulling your load." The number of dead bodies was more than the burial party could inter during one day. Whitebird assumed that they wouldn't be completed for at least another 2 days. So after helping with the loading and widening the burial site, he checked his traps and recovered 2 more rabbits. That night, he was able to roast the rabbits over an open fire the civilians had made, and he shared some of his food with one of them who'd been kind to him. He did his best to avoid the soldiers he had had the confrontation with, though they shouted many remarks at him while he warmed himself over the fire. Whitebird was sure they were going to kill him before they left. With sentries out to guard against the roving wolves, Whitebird went back to his makeshift hut. He didn't divulge the fact that he had 2 rifles and some ammunition under the rags he was using for a bed. That night he slept with a loaded gun in his hand. He wasn't sure if the 5 would try to sneak up on him. Twice during the night, he awakened, sensing someone was nearby. He rose and stepped outside his enclosure while shielding the gun, but he didn't see or hear anyone. He knew that he was in a precarious position. Soon, it became decision time for him. He took great pride that he had been able to survive for 4 days in the open prairie during a blizzard and keep the wolves at bay. He thought about life on the reservation and what his future would be like. To him, it was going to be an endless chore just to survive, let alone have a meaningful life. He didn't know if he wanted to go with the rescuers when they left. Yet, he felt that some of his brothers had probably survived and he had a responsibility to be with his family. The next morning, he found 2 more rabbits in his traps. He skinned the animals, took the meat back to his hut, and took stock of his provisions. He had 6 skins and food enough for 6 days. He fashioned 2 gloves from the skins he scavenged around the area. One of the members of the burial party had given him some matches, so he gathered some kindling, lit a fire, and cooked the raw meat. He wrapped the cooked meat in a newspaper, picked up his rifles and ammunition, and made his way south from the scene of the massacre. There had to be more to life than a reservation. As he was walking out of range, one of the soldiers called out to him, but he paid no mind and soon he was out of their sight. Intuitively, he felt that the longer he remained at the site, the greater the probability the soldiers would kill him. He had no idea where he was going, but he knew that it was warmer the further south he went.